On this 31st day of January 2012 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary, by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are still in Chapter 7, entitled Knowledge of the Absolute, text number 27. 7:27. Icha dvesha samuttena. Dvandva mohena bharata. Sarva bhutani sammoham. Sarge yanti parantapa. O scion of Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. Purport. The real constitutional position of the living entity is that of subordination to the Supreme Lord, who is pure knowledge. When one is deluded into separation from this pure knowledge, he becomes controlled by the illusory energy and cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illusory energy is manifested in the duality of desire and hate. Due to desire and hate, the ignorant person wants to become one with the Supreme Lord and envies Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pure devotees, who are not deluded or contaminated by desire and hate, can understand that Lord Sri Krishna appears by His internal potencies. But those who are deluded by duality and nescience think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is created by material energies. This is their misfortune. Such deluded persons, symptomatically, dwell in dualities of dishonor and honor, misery and happiness, woman and man, good and bad, pleasure and pain, etc., thinking, this is my wife, this is my house. I am the master of this house, I am the husband of this wife. These are the dualities of delusion. Those who are so deluded by dualities are completely foolish and therefore cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, it is human life really begins with the acceptance of austerity. There's a nice verse in the beginning of the fifth chapter of the fifth canto. Nayam deho deha bhajang niloke kashtan kaman arade vidbujange. This is the teachings of Lord Rishabhdev. Hare Krishna. Lord Rishabhdev is teaching his 100 sons and also many other great sages who have gathered there. He's on the point of retiring as the king of the universe or the world. And he is going to then wander. He's actually a expansion of Krishna. He's divine, Vishnu Tattva. But he says there in this verse, these very strong words, like it is said that the sadhus, their duty is to cut our attachments with their sharp words. There's one verse by Krishna, he says in the 11th canto, Tato duk sangam utsarja satsu sajjeta buddhiman. Santa evasam evasya chindandi monovyasagam uktibi. So what this says is that one should give up bad association. Association that simply puts us in the lower modes of nature and keeps us enwrapped and enchanted by this material world. So that's tato duk sangam utsujja. Then who should we associate with? Satsu sajjeta buddhiman. If one is intelligent, one should associate with the sat, with the devotees, the saints, and should become attracted and attached to them. Because by their words, santa, the saints, santa evasam chindandi monovyasangam uktibi. By the words, they can cut chindandi, the monovyasangam, the strong attachments that we've been cultivating in the mind for millions and millions of births. Not easy. But those words can, if we accept them properly, then they can help cut them off. So this is the strong words by Rishabhdev. He says, those who have taken the human form of life, nirloke, deha bhajam nirloke, they shouldn't work very hard, spend their lives just working hard, for kama, for fulfilling material desires, which is the same activity as the stool-eating hogs. He uses that very word. He said, this is no better than gross animal life. Rather, tapo divyam putra kayena sattvam shuddhye jasma brahma saukyam tvanantam. So he's contrasting two different kinds of happiness or pleasure. One is kama, the happiness that comes from sense gratification, which simply brings misery and is very degraded and degrading. And the other is called brahma saukyam, spiritual happiness. And what's the key element of the spiritual happiness? Anantam. It doesn't end. The other happiness is flickering, and a little happiness, a lot of misery. So here he's saying, how do you get to that point? Tapo divyam putrika, of sons. He's addressing mainly his sons here. Tapo divyam, one has to perform transcendental austerity. You know? A divya means divine, because austerity in any form gives you power. There's so much austerity being performed. You know, if you want to become a successful businessman or a successful athlete or teacher or anything, there's so much austerity to go through, right? To really become successful at anything. So austerity is essential for any kind of success. But if it's not divya, if it's not transcendental, if it's not aimed toward purification of the heart, then it just keeps you bound to this world. So there's the tapo divyam putaka, by which sattvam shuddhye, your existence will become purified. And then what happens from that? Yasma brahma saukyam tvanatam. You achieve this platform of unending happiness, brahma saukyam. So this is the choice we have. Are we going to simply let the senses run riot, just like the hogs and dogs, and stay bound in this world of suffering? Or are we going to practice divine austerity under the guidance of bona fide teacher, guru, and thus become purified in our existence so we can come up to the platform of unending and ever-expanding happiness? That's the choice that's presented by the Vedic literature. So how does that relate to this world? Well, ichha dvesha, when we're in the modes of nature and we're simply under the influence of the lust-saturated mind, intelligence, and senses, then we see these dualities. We live in a world of dualities. This is pleasurable, this is painful. Here's honor, here's dishonor. And we know practically instinctively from our very birth where pleasure lies. You know, the little child, you know, any little discomfort and he's crying, you know, the mother wraps in the arms, gives the breast, oh, this is bliss, you know. But then when the mother isn't there, it's agony, right? It's a world of heat and cold, pleasure and pain. And we go through life that way, right? So from this, ichha dvesha, this sense of ichha dvesha, which is a given for the conditioned souls, arises the delusion of duality. Because ultimately, what are we doing? We're experiencing as souls simply the different varieties of material energy. It's all part of the material energy, but we're experiencing it as happiness and unhappiness like that. But ultimately, we in ourselves as spiritual beings, we're not being affected by any of this. It's only our identification with the material body, and that includes the subtle body, which is very sensitive, honor and dishonor, that's all a mental thing, right? That can be even more painful or more blissful than gross sensual happiness, isn't it? And so, but still, that's all the body. It's still the body. It's subtle body, gross body, it's all material. So when we identify ourselves with that, then we're cast into this world of duality. As Krishna says, sarga yanti, when we come into creation, either from Mahavishnu, you know, in the big creation of this whole world, and we start taking up our bodies as we left them. Or each little creation, when we leave this body, then we create it again. It's like we're just being born, you know, we just like come into existence all over again. Of course, we never die or never born, but we think we are. So in either case, sarga yanti parantava, that all living beings, human beings, lower beings, all of them, we're in this delusion of duality. And in that delusion, of course, we have no inkling of the transcendental Lord, what to speak of even ourselves as souls. We're completely in illusion. I don't know if I was, I think, was the last time I was speaking about Akrura's prayers? But anyway, I've been kind of focusing on them. There's really kind of this ashtaka, there's this eight verses at the end of this chapter of prayers. And he gives a perfect expression here of this delusion of duality. And first he says, this may be a repeat, but none of these seem to have... Anyway, it's ever fresh. So he says, Bhagavan jiva loko yam mohitastava maya. The very word moha is used here. Mohitastava maya. Ahamame chasadgraho brahmyate garmavartmasu. So he's addressing Krishna. He says, Bhagavan, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, the people in this world, the jiva loka, the jivas are especially, the word jiva is especially used for the conditioned souls. In this world, they're completely bewildered by your maya potency, by your illusory potency, this external potency. But Bhagavan jiva loka mohitas tava maya, and in that bewilderment, aham mameti. These little phrases are nice to learn. Aham mameti, I and mine. Right? We identify with the body as myself, and the things in relation to the body as mine. And everyone's doing that, either individually or collectively, right? This land belongs to myself and those who look like me and who were born before me and are citizens of this country. It's all bodily concept, you know. So that's called ahamamiti, and it's asagraha. It's a false philosophy. A graha is a way in which you grasp the world. It's a philosophy. The word graha and grab, you know, it's related. So asadgraha means a false philosophy, a material philosophy of based on I and mind, and focus is false ego. And in that false ego, brahmite karma vartmasu, they wander on the path of karma, a fruit of work. Different bodies, different countries, different planets, all within the compass of the material world, however. From Brahmaloka down to Patalaloka, all are places of return, says Krishna, in which some of you suffer birth and death. So this is the situation. And then Akrura, he takes the role of a conditioned soul. He says, I'm like that too. Aham chatmatma jagara dharara svadanadishu brahmani swapnakalpeshu mudha satyadiyavibo. He calls himself a mudha, a fool, in this verse. So he says, I also am like that. I'm identifying with these things that are really like dreams. They're dreams. They come and they go, you know. First the body. Then things born of the body, namely children. The wife, the money, the home, the relatives, etc. Chatmatma, aham chatmatma, jagara dharata svajanadishu. Svajana means my people. Etc. They're just like dreams. Swapna kalpa. Swapna is a dream. And yet, I'm so foolish. Satya diavibo. Oh my Lord, I'm thinking this is the truth. This is a reality. This is what I should put my attention in. The be all and end all. It's a dream. He's seeing it's a dream. But in that dream, and this is the verse that really stands out for me in this series. He says, anityanatma dukke shuva parihya matiya yaham dvandva ramastamo vishno najane tvatmanak priyam. I'm upside down. Everything is reversed. Is everyone familiar with the Alice in Wonderland thing? Everyone, either by reading the book or seeing the Disney World movie or something, right? So what is it? It's like a world of where things are topsy-turvy, right? You don't know what anything means, right? So it's, and the idea of through the looking glass, reversal. So that's exactly what Vipariya means. And he gives an example. Anitya, anatma, and dukeshu. Those things which are not permanent, which are not myself, and which are sources of misery, I'm taking to be just the opposite. I'm taking that my situation is permanent. Everyone is living as if he's going to live forever. This is the most amazing thing, according to Yudhishthira. He was asked by his father, Yamaraj, out in the forest, in the Mahabharata, is this story. It's a long story, I won't go into it, but he's by a lake, and it belongs to Yamaraj, and his two brothers, his four brothers actually, they've all fainted away. They drank the water of this lake that belonged to Yamaraj without giving deference to Yamaraj, without answering the questions. And so they were knocked out. So Yudhishthira, they're all very thirsty and they need this water. So Yudhishthira doesn't, because he's Dharma personified, he won't drink the water. If it's not his, it's not his. So he agrees to answer the questions. There are a whole list of questions, the most famous of which is, what is the most amazing thing? The most amazing thing. Ahanyani bhutani gacchantihi yamalayam. Sheshak stavana michanti kimashtayam atakbaram. The word ichanti we had in this verse, icha, desire. So he says, day by day, ahanyani bhutani, all living beings, not just human beings, all are taken away to the land of Yamaraj. In other words, they're dying. Right? Just a day, in the last 24 hours, how many millions of people have died, you know, throughout this world? Millions. Right? Others are born, millions have died. But those who are left, Shesha, we're thinking, well, we'll make a permanent place here. Everyone's living as if they're going to live here permanently. You know? It's not going to happen to me. You know? Of course it will. And everything will be taken away. Everything material that you attach to this body is all going to be ripped away. So why work so hard to build up something, to gain something, that will be eventually taken away? If you knew it was going to be taken away tomorrow, of course you wouldn't work so hard. So what's the qualitative difference? So instead of tomorrow, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. Is there really any qualitative difference? No. You see? But still, people are building everything. Oh, my family, my house. Okay, I know I'll die. I'll leave a will, you know. And they'll be happy. Insurance policy, they'll put my name on a plaque. Tombstone, they'll remember me. Where are you going to be? How's that going to help you? You're going to be in some other body, some other country, some other planet. You see? Just like a dream. If you're whole, in the dream, you know, right? You're really serious, everyone's working really. And then you wake up and the whole thing is gone. All the relationships are gone, you know. See, it doesn't make any sense. So anyway, but in this bewilderment, everything is backwards. That which is temporary, my body, my family, everything I'm thinking is permanent. That which is not me, again, the body, I'm thinking is definitely me. And that which is, those things which are sources of misery, all these different objects of sense gratification, I'm thinking are objects of pleasure. And in that delusion, we're back to this verse, dvandva ramo. I'm trying to enjoy the dvandva. The very word is used. Look in your book here. Dvandva mohena. So this is dvandva arama. I'm trying to enjoy the dualities. And being covered more and more by ignorance and darkness. Tamo vishta. Which means, na jane tvatmanak priyam. He's speaking to Krishna. Therefore, I do not know. I cannot know that you are my dear most Lord and Master and friend. I've completely forgotten about you. The most important thing. Krishna. I've completely forgotten. So he compares himself to a fool. Yadabudo jalam hitva prati channam tarudbhavai abhyeti magatrishnam vai tadvatvaham padanmukha. So nice, there's some important words in this verse. So just like a fool who is standing next to a pool of water, he's very thirsty, and he can just, you know, turn to his right, move the plants a little bit, and take a nice draft of water, but he doesn't see the water because it's overgrown by the plants. This material energy comes from Krishna and it's covered Krishna. Or it's rather, it's covered us and we can't see. But the covering is also from Krishna because we want the covering. Therefore, we can't see Krishna. See, it's a very nice analogy. So what does he do? He sees out in the desert there, the Mrigatrishna. It's a great word. It's a word for mirage. It's a French word, right? Mirage. So mirage, we know what a mirage is. It looks like something's there, but it's not there. So the Mrigatrishna literally means that which the deer thirsts after. The animal, any animal or deer will run after. So why be like an animal? We're back to being like animals. So, and tadva tam param, similarly, param mukha, I've turned away from you. Krishna in this analogy is the nice clear water. We have the reservoir of pleasure within our heart. Remember the famous pamphlet? Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure. Anandam buddhi vardhanam. It's Krishna who's that bliss in our hearts. But we can't see, we can't perceive, we don't know. And so we go outside looking for pleasure. And we die, just like the animal in the desert, repeatedly. So then comes this very important verse, which ties back in with Rishabhadeva and also the verse here. And so he says, okay, I know this. And all of us theoretically know this, right? Does anyone want to think that this is all of this stuff is not true? It's all true. But now he says, and now we can really relate to this, Notsehe ham kripanadi kamakarma hatang mana rodhum pamati bishtakshay riyamanamitastataha. Even though I know this, my intelligence is so crippled that I don't have the strength to control my mind, which is beset by material desires and material activities and being dragged here and there by the uncontrolled senses. So this is our situation. Even we who come in touch with this knowledge and know it all theoretically, right? I mean, no one is thinking, no, that's not true, that's not true. All of us in this room are thinking, yeah, that's true. We believe it. But still, our mind is crippled, you know, so much, and we're so conditioned that the senses are pulling us here and there. The mind, we can't think of Hare Krishna. So this is our condition. Our crew has nailed it. So then the next verse gives the solution. And this is you know, important. So he says, soham tavang yupakate smasatam dorapam. Soham tavang yupasate turang dorapam. Tachapi ham bavadanugra ishamanye. Pungso bavedya hi sung sadanaba vargos. So the whole idea is, how can we absorb the mind in Krishna's lotus feet? We know that that's the remedy. We can rise beyond the dualities that way, you know, and be situated in that Brahma Saukhya. So here's the answer. He says, even though I can't control my mind, right? Even though the mind is being pulled here and there, I understand this philosophy. Still, I'm begging for a place at your lotus feet. I'm praying that you will fix your feet in my mind. I can't do it. My mind is too crazy. You see? But by your mercy, you know, even a fool like me can make advancement in devotional service. This is what he's saying. It says, I'm still approaching your lotus feet, which are very difficult to attain, but by your mercy it can happen. And in that way, at least to some degree, my material life will be ended, and by worshiping the pure devotee, I will be able to fix my mind on you. See, here's the key. In other words, we may know all of these things. This is like basic philosophy, that you know, there's no happiness in this material world within these dualities. We are pure spirit. Our happiness is in connection with the Supreme Personality of God, pure spirit. And yet, still we find, because of our conditioning and our habits and our past, that we cannot fix our mind purely in devotional service. So therefore, we need to pray that Krishna will, you know, give us the strength. Give us the strength. Give us the power. Bless us with constant remembrance of his lotus feet. And so this is why you know, there's no, as Mahatatvabhu was saying, there's no mechanical formula. It's not a physical thing. The more you investigate devotional service, you see, so much of it has to do with your inner attitude. It's like I like to always refer back to the chapter 13, where there's 20 different aspects of knowledge, right? But the first, so many of them are like moral principles. Amanat vam madambit vam mahingsak shantarajava. You know, not being proud. What does that have to do with it? I can go to the University of California, I can be as proud as can be as long as I get A's and B's and fill in the right blanks. And I'll get my degree. Adambit vam means, you know, not deceitful. Clean, what does that have to do with it? You know, like I can ace the test. Go there in an old sweatshirt, don't matter. See what I mean? In other words, it has nothing, it's very little relationship to what they call knowledge out there. Real knowledge and advancement in devotional service really begins with the heart. It begins with the attitude of how with prayer. I mean, it all comes back to that. You know, everything we do is kind of a prayer. It's all a prayer. And when you're bowing down, when you're chanting, when you know, even when you're doing some service, why is it menial service? You know, menial service is really the best kind of service. Because it's breaking down the false ego, meaning that I'm helpless out here. You know, I know you. You know, this is a very little service I can do, but please, Krishna, bless me. You know, bring me to your lotus feet. You study the songs and the prayers of the great acharyas, and you'll see they cultivate that helpless, you know, humble position. Great towering intellects. They're really thinking, I'm helpless out here. Please lift me up. You know, place me as an atom at your lotus feet. This is Lord Krishna himself, and the role of his own devotee is Lord Chaitanya praying that way, the teachers. So how can we get beyond this delusion of duality? That's mentioned in the next verse. So back to Rishabhdev. So by the austerities, this is how we rise above the dualities. In other words, embrace those things that are not so comfortable, that may not, you know, they're not feed our false ego. You know, book distribution is great because it breaks down your false ego. You know, you go out there and boom, they knock you out. It's great for devotional service because it requires that you pray or any kind of menial service. It's the best service. Embrace that and look for that. You know, and then you won't be simply, you know. How can you put it? Spontaneously or instinctively, you know, trying to be comfortable and trying to avoid things that are not pleasing to the senses. That's Ichchadvesha Samutena. So therefore, the next verse is there. How to get beyond the dualities? That's in this next verse. Yesham dandakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam tedvanma mohini mukta Bhajante mam dadavata. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Purport. Those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it is very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Only those who have passed their lives in practicing the regulative principles of religion, who have acted piously, and who have conquered sinful reactions, can accept devotional service and gradually rise to the pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then gradually they can meditate in trance on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the process of being situated on the spiritual platform. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness in the association of pure devotees, for in the association of great devotees, one can be delivered from delusion. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.2, now this is for Rishabhdev again, this is the next verse, that if one actually wants to be liberated, he must render service to the devotees, mahatsevam dvara maho vimukte, but one who associates with materialistic people is on the path leading to the darkest region of existence, tamo dvaram yoshitam sangi sangam. All the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. The impersonalists do not know that forgetting their constitutional position as subordinates to the Supreme Lord is the greatest violation of God's law. Unless one is reinstated in his own constitutional position, it is not possible to understand the Supreme Personality or to be fully engaged in his transcendental loving service with determination. Whoa, here's a mistake. Maybe we fixed it. So, let's see. Let's analyze this. Antakatam papam. So, means that when sinful activities are eradicated. So, this is the first thing. We have our four regulative principles, right? These are the pillars of sin, if you will. And they're also the basic principle of this, civilization. You know, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, intoxication, they're all pervasive. People take it for granted. You know, they think that if you try to curb those things, that this is a great offense. You know, you're repressing people. You know, but why is it that these are so sinful? Because they're very intense sense gratification, gross or subtle. Like gambling is like a subtle thing, but it can be just as intoxicating as any drug, and just as disturbing for the mind. You know, you can imagine. And the others also, very strong sensual activities that very strongly bind us to the bodily conception of life. And all of them quickly bring misery. Drugs, meat eating, illicit sex. You know, everyone knows that they bring quick reactions or delayed reactions, but very painful. So those are basic sins. They have to be ended because they're exactly opposite to devotional service. And lives a pious life, jananam punyakarmanam. So how can one give those things up? One has to come into the association of devotees to get the spiritual strength to do that. You know? And there has to be a guide, someone who is giving us the impetus, the inspiration. Now, at the same time, we have the great advantage, you know, of over other ages, of the holy name. The holy name of Krishna not only eradicates sinful reactions by the boatload, but it also gives you the spiritual strength to avoid sin in the future. This is devotional service in general. This comes up nicely in the beginning of the sixth canto. Because, you know, sin, it's like, we call it sin. You know, it has kind of a Christian connotation. But it means violating the laws of God, the laws of the universe. You know. And what happens is that, a little pleasure, lots of pain. You know, read the fifth canto. This is our fire and brimstone, you know, section. Latter chapter 20, the last chapter of the fifth canto. It describes the hellish planets that you can suffer in for millions of years for committing these gross sins. You know, it's there. And, you know, and if you don't believe that, well, just look at, you know, believe in karma. I mean, we're sitting here in San Diego, United States in general, although there are plenty of places in this country where it's, you know, where people are suffering like anything. There's a whole gulag out there. You know what a gulag is? The gulag archipelago? No? Gulag is what it comes from, the Russian, when, you know, Stalinists, where they used to have these prisons in Siberia. They just send you off there and forget about you. Horrible. You know about that, right? We have that in America. Yeah, we have all these prisons. It's a prison industry. 2 million people incarcerated, more than in China or any other country in the world. And sometimes, you know, they put these people in the isolation for years on end. You know, we're sitting here comfortably, but it's happening just a few hundred miles from us. Yeah. What to speak of whole countries in Africa where there's, you know, Somalia, where there's, you know, there's many, many people suffering. Hundreds of millions of people don't have enough to eat, no clean water, no place to sleep. Right on this planet. You don't have to go to a hellish planet. There's hellish places right on this planet. So who's to say, you know, that we won't be reborn there? You know, you don't know if you act in a certain way. So the point is that it's all invisible. People are just oblivious to all the reality. This is the reality of this world. So in any case, we have to end the sin and somehow negate all the sinful reactions we have come to. That all is taken care of by bhakti, centered on chanting the holy name. That's the whole point of the Ajamil, you know, chapter. So much important instruction there. So we have a chance. Even we read this book, if we don't practice, if we don't chant Hare Krishna, we'll never be able to follow these instructions. But if we do chant, and we're in association with devotees, and we're under guidance, and we accept that guidance, we have a fighting chance of actually coming to this stage. Antagatam papam, becoming sinless, and acting only piously, means in bhakti, punyakamanam. Then you become liberated from the dvandva moha, from the delusion of duality. In other words, cold or hot, you're still chanting Hare Krishna, you're still feeling blissful. You know? I remember, you know, sometimes certain high points stick out. It was, I don't know, 74 or something. And we should go out for hours on Harinam. It was the middle of winter in New York City. It was about 10 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, like 22 degrees below freezing. And we were out there, you know, it was a small party, but we were chanting. And I remember it was so cold. I was holding, so the wind wouldn't get in here. And I'm jumping up and down in Bryant Park, which is behind the library. And we just, you know, part of the jumping up was to stay warm, but part of it was to, you know, because of the ecstasy of the kirtan. So, you know, I could feel the cold, but it wasn't getting to me, you know. And we've all experienced that. You become more equipoised and, you know, steady, you know. The physical problems don't bother you as much. This is spoken of by Kapiladev. He says, Marashiya kata mrishta. Yeah, Marashiya kata mrishta shinvandi kata yanti cha. Sorry, I got it. Tapanti vivadhastha pa naitan mankata chetasa. It says that for those who are absorbed in hearing and chanting my sweet glories, kata mrishta means very sweet kata, and their minds are absorbed in that, then all the various distresses in this world don't bother them so much. Tapanti vivadhastha pa naitan mankata chetasa. Because their minds have gone to me, madgata chetasa. So this is how we can become free of suffering, even in this world, and stop incurring future lives when we'll suffer like anything. So that's, you know, what to speak of experiencing the higher pleasure. So therefore, he says, and bhajante imam dridhavrata. This word dridhavrata is worth focusing on. It means with a firm vow. It means with some strength. Because after all, this path is not easy. We're going against the grain here of millions of births of conditioning. So therefore, naturally, there'll be obstacles. And you have to have firm determination. As it is said in the Upadeshamrita. Utsahanasheha daryat tatat kamabhartha. One has to have enthusiasm, patience, and determination. They go together. You see? And tatat kamabhartha. Also following all the different things we need to follow. And how to keep one's strength and determination? Give up the association of non-devotees. And where's the model? Follow in the footsteps of the great devotees. These six things will help us. Enthusiasm, determination, and patience. Following all different principles of devotional service. Giving up the association of non-devotees. And following in the footsteps of real devotees. You know, we can. It's a nice formula by Rupa Goswami. So these two verses, 27 and 28, describe the soul in duality and how we can rise above those dualities. Give up sin and practice devotional service. And then we'll become firmly fixed in our bhajan, bhajante mam jodhavata. This is Krishna's own formula. So it's available to all. Okay, any discussion on these points?
What is the reference to the Akrura's prayers?
Okay, chapter 40, 10th canto, the last 8 verses. I forget the exact numbers. It's definitely chapter 40. Yeah.
Who is Maharaj Yudhishthira's? Who is asking the questions?
Yamaraj.
Oh, Yamaraj.
He was, yeah, from a disembodied voice. He was actually asking the questions, and he's the son of Yamaraj.
And then Yudhishthira said, Yudhishthira's reply.
He didn't know it was his father.
But Yamaraj asked him, what's the most amazing
thing? Amazing thing, and he said, Ahanya Hani Bhutani. It was Yudhishthira who said that.
Okay.
He answered all the questions correctly.
So Yamaraj asked Yudhishthira, what's the most amazing thing?
Yeah, that was one of the many questions. And that's the most famous one. Yeah, okay. And what happens when you're able to do what's recommended in text 28? Then you get text 29. Jada manana mokshaya. Mama shritte yatanti ye. Te brahma tad vidu kritsnam. Adhyatmam karma chakilam. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental activities. Birth, death, old age, and diseases affect this material body, but not the spiritual body. There is no birth, death, old age, and disease for the spiritual body, so one who attains a spiritual body becomes one of the associations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engages in eternal devotional service is really liberated. Aham Brahmasmi, I am spirit. It is said that one should understand that he is Brahman, or spirit soul. This Brahman conception of life is also in devotional service, as described in this verse. The pure devotees are transcendentally situated on the Brahman platform, and they know everything about transcendental activities. Four kinds of impure devotees who engage themselves in the transcendental service of the Lord achieve their respective goals And by the grace of the Supreme Lord, when they are fully Krishna conscious, they actually enjoy spiritual association with the Supreme Lord. But those who are worshippers of demigods never reach the Supreme Lord in his supreme planet. Even the less intelligent Brahman-realized persons cannot reach the supreme planet of Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan. Only persons who perform activities in Krishna consciousness, mam ashritya, are actually entitled to be called Brahman because they are actually endeavoring to reach the Krishna planet. Such persons have no misgivings about Krishna, and thus they are factually Brahman. Those who are engaged in worshipping the form or archa of the Lord, or who are engaged in meditation on the Lord simply for liberation from material bondage, also know by the grace of the Lord the purports of Brahman, Adibhuta, etc., as explained by the Lord in the next chapter. So, now comes a little list here of things that the Krishna conscious person knows. But the first idea is jara marana mokshaya mama shruti yathanti, that those who aspire for real liberation from birth and death, they have to take shelter of Krishna. There's no other way. This is also explained by Rishabhdev, where he says, he has this nice little series of verses, Nunam Pamatta Kurade Vikarma. It says, those who are simply after sense gratification are certainly mad. Nunam Pramatta. And he says it's not a very good idea, because just by engaging in sense gratification, you're sure to get another body, and therefore you're sure to suffer. That's his first verse. And then he has this nice word, parabhavas tavada bodha jato. Parabhavas means defeat. We're always defeated. You know, from Bill Gates down to the simple guy wandering around here on Pacific Beach and, you know, with no home. Everyone's defeated. Someone may look like he's successful in this world, but ultimately he's defeated. It's all taken away and he dies. You know? So that's called parabhavas tavada bodha jato. And that defeat is born of ignorance. Because we don't know how to act for our ultimate benefit, right? They may know so many things, but not that, most important. So he says, abodha jato, yavana jigyasata atma tattva. So he's saying, as long as one does not inquire into the truth of the soul, one will be defeated in this lifetime, because it'll be completely absorbed in material activities. Yavat kriyas tavadidam manovai karmatrakam yena shirida bandha. As long as one's mind is saturated with karmic or fruit of desire, one will be forced to act on those desires, and that will ensure another bondage to the body and another birth. So he's painting a picture here. Liberation means liberation from bondage to the body, bondage to birth and death. We're talking about liberation here. So it's evam mana karma vashangpa yungte. So there's a certain push, just like he says in the Upadeshamrita. When the mind, body, and senses are saturated with the modes of nature, habituated to acting in this way, then they push you to act this way and that way. Everyone knows. It's like a drug addict. He's pushed. You know, he's got to have a cigarette, got to have a drink, got to have a shot or toke, whatever you call it. Right? Whereas we're sitting here, you know, I haven't taken drugs in 40 years. I don't want to. They don't have any control on me. But someone sitting next to me who's habituated, the senses are saturated, you know, got to have it, right? So that's called karma vashang. It means the push of karma. Comes from ignorance, upadiyamani. And then comes the key phrase, which ties in exactly. Priti nayavan mai vasudeve namuchate dehi yogena tavat. As long as one has not developed love for me, Vasudeva, and here Rishabhdev reveals his identity with Krishna or Vishnu. Pritir niyavan mahi vasudeve namuchate dehi yogena tavat. This is clear as day. As long as one has not developed love for me, you will not be able to get free from the bondage to a material body. In other words, you'll stay in the round of birth and death. So there's no mukti without bhakti. Let's put it as simple as possible. Anyone who's trying to be liberated in this world without developing love for Krishna is on a fool's errand. He's deluding himself. That's mentioned in the 10th canon. So this is an important impetus for devotional service. Now, ultimately, we're not after mukti. We're after love for Krishna. He can put us in the hell or heaven, you know, as long as we can serve his lotus feet. But in our present stage, When we're suffering due to previous activities, we should be very eager to get out of birth, death, old age, and disease. And Prabhupada preached on that point a million times. You know, at least that should be an impetus. And also, it's an important preaching point. We can convince others that this is inevitable in this material world. Don't you want to get free from this and be liberated, you know, free from the pains of suffering? So that's what jara marana mokshaya mama shuddhi yatanti. Those who want to be free of birth and death, they take shelter of me in devotional service. A very simple idea. And they are actually Brahman, means they're on the Brahman platform, Brahma-Bhuta platform. That will become clear in subsequent chapters. Brahma-Bhuta platform means above the material modes of nature. Equipoised, you know, happiness, praise and blame. You know, just like if you're on a Harinam party, you're more or less in the Brahman conception, if you're focusing on the holy name. People may be insulting you. Who cares? Do you really care? Whereas if, you know, walking alone, you know, not in Krishna consciousness, in your previous life without anything, if someone suddenly, you know, insults you immediately, you get angry or disturbed. Isn't it? Proof that being on that Brahman platform, being a Krishna consciousness, makes you, you know, a little bit transcendental. Works. We have a full experience. Any final comments or questions? We will finish this chapter tomorrow. Maybe we'll have a review. It would be good, because it'll be our last class for a while. I'm sorry? I left off. We have one more verse. We're going to be on 30 tomorrow. Yeah. We can review the chapter. Thank you very much. We'll have a few minutes to prepare for our kirtan. Glorious to Shiva.